50 is quick to install and easy to use. 2, turns information into insights. 3, improves efficiency. 4, easily tracks and forecasts cash flow. 5, supports online banking. 6, creates and manages budgets.
Time's up.
What?
6. Seriously? For all 50 reasons and a free trial of Sage 50 Accounting, visit sagetoday.com/50.
Wait, I can do it.
Oh, that's sweet. SageToday.com/50.
You've had an accident, and the guy's bloodthirsty lawyer wants to sue you. How would you protect yourself? Call 1-800-SAFE-AUTO for affordable liability insurance. Drive safe, spend less.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pit-a-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade. But I'm not afraid. This rover,
thank God it's Friday!
Crossed over, if I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet, on the sunny side of the street.
Welcome to the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the Afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris, your 20% host, giving 100% of the effort every Friday afternoon. Ian and Dan are here with me, although only physically. I can tell already that mentally, these guys are already in Jamaica.
I've checked out a week ago.
Because next week, they and Frank and several dozen listeners of this show will be in Jamaica. And I know, having been in this situation, that the Friday before you're about to leave, it's like you've already got,
we're gone. We've checked out.
The entire show, Dan's going to be thinking, did I remember to pack socks?
Oh, my goodness, yes.
I haven't even packed yet.
It's the mental checklist.
Yeah, what was I thinking? You guys leave on Sunday?
No, Saturday. Oh, tomorrow.
Saturday. Tomorrow morning and night.
Well, then why would you be packed at this point?
No. This is the first year where I had to pack early because I have to work tonight as well. Mm-hmm. So I won't get home till 4 or 5 in the morning
And you'll sleep
essentially like, going straight to the airport.
Yeah, I was going to say, you'll sleep like an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then go to the airport.
I don't even know if I'll do the hour and a half. I don't even know if it's worth it at that point.
Wow.
That's one of those deals where you have a hard time falling asleep.
Yeah, and that's then, what I told her anyway, because she's like, I can't believe you got to work tonight. I go, well, chances are I wouldn't fall asleep anyway. Yeah. I can never sleep before a trip.
Neither can I.
Yeah, you roll around, and you look over at the clock, and it's 2 in the morning. Two, it's like, I'm wide awake, 2, 3, and then all of a sudden, it hits you, and you fall asleep at like 4, and then the alarm clock's
5 o'clock.
I'm even worse than that. There have been times where I wasn't flying, like I had a 1:20 p.m. flight.
And you still could not fall asleep.
Like the night before, I was up doing things or whatever, and I'll pack in the morning because I'll be fine.
Right. Yeah.
I'll get enough sleep tonight. And I go to bed like 1 o'clock in the morning.
No.
That's not happening. No. Like 6:15. All right, I finally fell asleep.
Because, in years past, we've had like 7 o'clock flights. So that means you're essentially getting up at home at like 3:30 to get to the airport around 5-ish.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was not
not even worth it.
The good thing is, at that time in the morning, everybody at the airport's in a good mood.
Yes.
I mean that seriously.
Yeah,
they are. If you go late in the day and the TSA line is, like if you're flying American, if it's out to the bagel bakery that's down there, if it's that far down the corridor at Terminal 1, that's like Friday afternoon, like now.
Yes.
Or an hour from now, it'll be that way.
Those workers have had a full day of work already,
They're not in a good mood.
No.
You're not in a good mood. But you get there at 5 o'clock in the morning, and everybody's like, hi, yeah, I know it's early. Okay.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Starbucks is open. Dunkin' Donuts is open. Yes. Everybody there understands, we got the whole morning thing down. We're going to get you through here as fast as possible. Believe me, everything's cool.
Is there a Dunkin' Donuts in the airport now?
Yeah.
All right.
It's at the Southwest Terminal.
Oh, man.
So you got to go to Terminal 2. It's in there.
Yeah.
Which is probably not a good idea if you're flying out of Terminal 1 to go through security at Terminal 2 to acquire a donut.
No. deal with something.
There'll be something.
We have a very busy show today. In about 15 minutes, an author by the name of David Vondrell is going to be here. He's written a book about Lincoln. I'm having him on because this Spielberg movie is so hot now and nominated for, I think it's 212 Academy Awards.
Wow.
Yeah. It's actually nominated in categories that don't exist. That's Man. How powerful Steven Spielberg
That's
is.
That's awesome.
So this will be interesting because the movie takes place in the last few months of Lincoln's life and obviously presidency. But his book, David Vondrell's book, says that 1862, 3 years before that, was more important. We were embroiled in the Civil War, et cetera. Well, I'll let him tell you about it. So he's going to be here. And then speaking of movies, Joe Hipperson will be here in an hour to talk about the movies that are coming out this weekend. And then I've asked Bob Reno, my old friend from badjocks.com.
Oh, sure. I remember Bob.
The website where cops meet SportsCenter. I first had him on the air like 15 years ago. He's still doing the website. And, of course, with the Manti Te'o story.
Oh, my goodness.
He's the guy I had to call to have on here. By the way, did you read last night? Taylor Swift has already written her next hit song about her imaginary boyfriend breaking up with her. Inspired Manti by Te'o. Manti Te'o.
All right.
So Bob will be on, and then we'll have Knuckleheads in the news, and then we'll have Bill Clevelin will be on with his regular segment today. And then in the 5 o'clock hour, we'll have the Harris Challenge, and we'll have, Mike Evans. So,
chock full.
Wait a second. I think I'm forgetting something else. Lance Armstrong. Am I forgetting anything?
No.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
All right.
Did you see Lance on Oprah last
night? Yes.
A couple clips.
I did. I don't get it. He seems so distant and not prepared to answer a lot of stuff. And like, he didn't want to throw. He was real careful about not throwing anyone else under the bus.
So yeah. I'm guessing he rehearsed
very careful
quite a bit.
About
I
that.
Guarantee you he rehearsed.
Yeah. A couple run-throughs.
I want to play for you one thing. The second clip I gave you, was it wrong? Do you have that?
Yes.
I just want to play this for you because as you listen to this, think about the definition of a psychopath. That's. I think you could apply that word to Lance Armstrong here.
Was it a big deal to you? Did it feel wrong?
At the time?
Mm-hmm.
No.
It did not even feel wrong?
No. It's scary.
Did you feel bad about it?
No. Even scarier.
Did you feel in any way that you were cheating?
No. The scariest.
You did not feel that you were cheating, taking banned drugs.
You know, at the time, no.
At the time, no.
And I look up, I had this exercise where, you know, because I kept hearing, you know.
That you were cheating.
I'm a drug cheat, I'm a cheat, yeah. I'm a cheater. And I went and looked up, I just looked up the definition of cheat.
Yes.
And the definition of cheat is to gain an advantage on a rival or foe, you know, that they don't have or that, you know. I didn't view it that way. I viewed it as a level playing field.
Now, that's a psychopath. Somebody who's doing something that's blatantly wrong, but doesn't recognize it as wrong.
Yeah.
Doesn't recognize that he's cheating, doesn't recognize that he's screwing other people, doesn't recognize he's breaking the rules in the first place, and doesn't feel bad about it. That is psychopathic behavior.
And it's very similar to the whole steroid thing. When that all happened, the ones that were adamant about saying,
No, I didn't do it.
And it turns out they did later.
Here's the difference. Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, Barry Bonds did not viciously attack the people who were making claims about steroids about them.
Well, Roger Clemens.
Roger
I think
Clemens
was the only one.
Yes, yes.
But yeah, Mark McGwire abstained. He didn't say anything. He said, I'm not going
to. Right, I'm not here to relive the past.
The past. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Why we brought you here? We're not here to talk about the future.
Yeah.
What do you think the weather's going to be next week? Those aren't the questions. But in Lance's case, it's not just a matter of lying, cheating, and not understanding that those things were wrong at the time. It's that he went after people and sued them. Oprah asked him one question last night, you know, about some woman you sued her, right? And he said, you know, we sued so many people I can't remember.
What? Yeah. And now, aren't they going to come back? And they're probably going to sue him.
Yes. And matter of fact, there's a guy by the name of, where I've got it in here. There's a guy from SCA Promotions, a sports insurance company that once paid Lance $12.5 million in bonuses for his Tour de France wins. He said, we paid this guy $12 million. We want the money back. If we don't get the money back, we'll be filing a lawsuit next week.
Ooh.
Armstrong sued a British tabloid, the Sunday Times, for libel.
Yeah.
Saying everything that they said about him was false. No, turns out now it's true. He's facing a whistleblower suit from Floyd Landis, who was another member of the team, who admitted that he had taken performance-enhancing drugs and had been there and seen Lance doing all these things. Lance sued him for that. So Landis countersued him for potential damages, $100 million.
Oh, wow. Man. And how much is Lance Armstrong worth?
I don't think he's worth $100 million.
No.
But I don't know, because there was a lot of endorsement money in there. The ones I feel sorry for are the people who weren't even in business relationships with him. Like this woman, Betsy Andreo, who was on with Anderson Cooper last night, and then I saw her again on Good Morning America this morning. She is the wife of a guy who was one of Lance's teammates. And she went to the hospital when Lance was in there suffering from testicular cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
And she told people, she testified to a grand jury and to others, that while she was there, she heard him talking about all the drugs he'd been taking, that the doctor there had asked him, did you take any performance-enhancing drugs? And he named several of them. Well, when she told the world that, or not even the world, but some investigators that, he came after her, filed this lawsuit against her. And she said on Good Morning America, yes, I've spoken to Lance in the last few days, and he has apologized to me. And, you know, then they ask, well, so what was the conversation like? Well, I don't want to get into particulars. And Lance said last night on Oprah, well, I don't want to get into particulars, which to me means settlement and confidentiality clause.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
Paid her off. I'm sorry after all these years here. I'm going to cover whatever your legal expenses were, and here's a little bit extra. That'll take care of that, but don't tell people what I said and all that. It's just, I don't think that last night changes the image of him. In fact, I think it reinforces the image that this guy is scum.
Oh, yeah. I think so.
No.
You don't think so, Lance?
No.
Yeah, I don't think he did himself any favors last night. He didn't come across as sincere or anything. He was just, he was like very protective, very close, like with his answers.
Yeah.
They're very choreographed.
The other part that got me was Oprah several times tried to get him to admit that he had essentially told other members of his cycling team, the Tour de France teams, look, if you guys don't do this, you're going to be off the team.
Mm-hmm.
And she tried several times to get him to admit that, and he would, no, that's not true. And watching that, I thought to myself, you're still lying.
Yeah.
All these other people say that you did that, and you're still denying that?
Yeah. Yeah, you have 10 people that are saying that you did it, and they're, no, that's not true.
No, no, no.
After you've lied the whole time,
right?
Now we're supposed to believe you.
Yeah.
No.
he said last night, I know I'm not the most believable person right now. Right now?
What?
Yeah,
give me some time.
I don't know why we're supposed to believe anything out of your mouth anymore. You know that Sheryl Crow somewhere is going, when he said I do, he was lying.
Yes.
That's why I'm not married to him anymore. Lance, if you had it to do again, would you marry Sheryl Crow?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. We're back in a moment here. It's Paul Harris with Ian and Dan on the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS.
Everyone, Victoria Babu here. Join me Saturday at 4 p.m. after the Mizzou game for my show, Smart Living. 3 weeks into the new year, and how are you doing with your resolutions? Retail Me Not's Trey Bodge says more of us are turning to mobile apps for help. And you see her on Dr. Oz. Hungry Girl author Lisa Lillian offers up guilt-free, tasty foods to help you reach your goal. And my featured weight loss success story is none other than KTRS's own new Saturday morning man, Sean Streeter. Find out how he's dropped nearly 60 pounds. Join me Saturday at 4 p.m. for Smart Living.
All righty, we're going to check traffic right now. Here is Tim Weiland. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dan.
Hey, what?
You know what? You're a professor over at the center, correct?
Yes, I am.
And I once was.
Yes.
And we got to send a big congratulations out to a St. Louisan who was one of my students at the broadcast center.
I know exactly what you're going to talk about. Go ahead.
Aaron
go
Goldsmith.
Ahead. Yes.
Congratulations to him. He just got the radio announcer job, play-by-play job for the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
Wow. Very
and
nice.
Let's do it. He did it in pretty fast fashion. This guy graduated around 2008.
6 years ago, they said. They were talking about
wow.
it today.
You know what?
Yeah.
All that time you spent teaching him how to queue up records is really going to come in the
yeah. end. No, we taught him how to speak.
Yeah.
So congratulations.
Did you give him a home run call? Every baseball announcer has to have a home run call.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to think if Kerber was teaching back then at the sportscasting.
I don't know.
Been
6 years ago? I don't know if he was.
You know who might have one for him?
Who's that?
Lance Armstrong. Lance, do you have a home run call he can use?
No.
I didn't think so.
Or you got Mike Shannon. Get up, baby. Get up, baby. It's gone. And then John Rooney. That's a gutter.
Oh, Dan, nobody else doesn't like you. All right. Well, as far as traffic goes, it's just volume that's starting to build now on southbound 270. Getting a little heavy on westbound 64 between Hampton and McCausland, 270 and Mason. You're already stacking up approaching the Blanchet Bridge from about the Earth City Expressway. And this traffic report is brought to you by Allstate. Don't let mayhem leave you stranded. Be protected with good hands, roadside assistance from Allstate. It's free to join and open to everyone. Register at allstate.com/roadside. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
When R&R Sanitation says they'll drop off a porta potty anywhere in the region, they're not kidding. They once dropped off a porta potty on the corner of a parade route. That's what you get with R&R Sanitation. Service, reliability, dependability. They're clean and they're bigger, which makes them cleaner longer, which means you don't spend as much money servicing them. R&R Sanitation, St. Louis owned, St. Louis operated. They're the best. Having some work done on the house? Are you in charge of a charitable event? Maybe a construction firm? The point is R&R Sanitation porta potties, 314-776-4000. They're bigger, they're better, and they're made better, which means they're better porta potties. And I know you're laughing. Really? Is he selling porta potties? Yes, I am, because there's nothing worse than having a bad porta potty. That's why you need R&R Sanitation, 314-776-4000 or rnrportabletoilets.com. They want your stinking business. R&R Sanitation.
Hi, this is John Shea, Mr. Fix-It. Hey, if your garage door or garage door opener needs service, Overhead Door Company, the people you want to call, 314-781-5200. They have standard service hours, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, and Saturday, 8 to 6. They have same-day service if you call before 2 o'clock. They service all brands of garage doors and garage door openers, not just their own. Visit their newly improved website at ohdstl.com and go by their new showroom. They're on Lackland Road, just west of Westport Plaza Drive in Maryland Heights. They have emergency service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Their trucks are like rolling warehouses, so they get most all the parts they need to fix your garage door or garage door opener the first time, so there's no extra cost. Their average tenure of the residential technician exceeds 5 years, giving them the most experience to diagnose and repair any door in any situation. They have the preventive maintenance program available to extend the life of your garage door and garage door opener. Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. Give them a call, 314-781-5200, or look them up on the web, ohdstl.com. That's Overhead Door St. Louis.
Hope Chapel has been providing compassionate and professional funeral services for over 110 years. In their fourth generation of independent service, Hope Chapel continues to be a source of stability and comfort for countless families in the St. Louis area.
Hi, I'm Christy Bope, and I'm proud to be part of the fourth generation of the Hope Chapel family. As a family business, we know how to best serve your family in your time of need.
I'm Scott Humes, and I'm also a proud member of the fourth generation of the Hope Chapel family. We offer pre-planning, out-of-town arrangements, and special services, all handled with support and careful attention to your family's specific needs and wants.
I'm Chip Obert, another member of the fourth generation of the Bope Chapel family. We're proud of our recently completed expansion, where we can handle the largest of crowds while still accommodating small, intimate funerals as well as cremation services.
When you need them, Bope Chapel is there for you and your family. At your time of need, call 314-965-7680 or visit them at bopechapel.com. Boak Chapel, a family tradition since 1902.
Tired of your dentures coming loose? Well, those days are over thanks to Dr. Bowen and Bowen Dental Care. Dr. Bowen can save you from those embarrassing moments and fit your new implants with your existing dentures.
We have denture wearers that come in that they're flopping around and they practically don't even wear them because they get so many sore spots. We place some implants to help support that denture and they're able to eat a corn on the cob.
Dr. Bowen will bring his expertise and the latest technology to you at no extra cost.
We'll do a free consultation, and if we need to take a 3D view of the bone that's available, we're offering that at no charge.
With Dr. Bowen, implants are great and are a much better option than a bridge.
A lot of people know that have bridges, they had to prep the two neighboring teeth down. It's a three-tooth solution to a one-tooth problem, which, you know, with an implant, it's a one-tooth solution for a one-tooth problem.
For a free consultation, call Bowen Dental Care, 314-921-3500. That's B-O-A-I-N, BowenDentalCare.com.
Staples Copy and Print knows you need to promote your business.
Outdoor banners.
Detailing your one-of-a-kind product offering.
Trifold, full-color, double-sided brochures.
As you grow your business.
Business cards, postcards, car magnets.
And your customer base.
Design services, presentations, shipping.
So you go to the one place that has it all and prints it right.
Staples.
Now get 39-cent color copies in-store, at self-serve, or online at StaplesCopyCenter.com for pickup or delivery. Ends 126. Details in-store or online. Staples. That was easy.
Is it leaking? Hi, St. Louis. This is the roofer for Lane House Construction. Are you leaking energy from your windows, or maybe your siding needs replaced? Please remember, Lane House Construction is your local source for roofing, siding, windows, and gutters. Call today for your free estimate. 866-546-ROOF.
The Big 550 is your home for everything Mizzou. Tune in this Monday night from 6 to 9 for Mizzou Monday. Live from Friendly Sports Bar and Grill in South City with John Hadley. We'll recap the last game, preview the next game, and for everyone at Friendly Sports Bar and Grill, we'll have more fun off the air. Mizzou Mondays live from Friendly Sports Bar and Grill in South City. Brought to you by Mount Pleasant, Missouri Wines. America's oldest wine-growing appellation. Grown and bottled in Augusta, Missouri. And the Big 550 KTRS. We are our Mizzou.
It's Paul Harris here at the Large Morning Show in the afternoon, Friday afternoons on the Big 550 KTRS. David Vondrell is joining me in the studio now. I read a book that he wrote over a decade ago about the 2000 election that was called Deadlock, which was just a phenomenal read about that unbelievable battle between Bush and Gore. He's written several books, and his latest is about another president, a little bit before our time. His name is Abraham Lincoln. And there's a lot now about Lincoln because Steven Spielberg's movie has become a hit and is nominated for every Academy Award that they can make a statue for. So David is out now with his new book, which is called Rise to Greatness, Abraham Lincoln and America's Most Perilous Year. Welcome to the show, David. It's good to have you.
It's great to be here, Paul.
So the Spielberg movie takes place in the last few months of Lincoln's life, which puts it in 1865, the 13th Amendment, slavery ending, the Emancipation Proclamation, his inauguration, and assassination. You would think that that's the big year of his presidency, but you say no. In fact, it was much earlier.
I think 1862 is the year that Lincoln becomes the revered, you know, man of the marble statue that that we think of. As the year began, really, none of the great statesmen of Europe, none of the experienced wise heads in Washington, really believed that the Union could be saved. The South was so large, such a big piece of real estate. It was so it controlled the most valuable commodity in the world, cotton. They were so determined to leave. And here was this weak federal government being led by this unknown, unschooled frontier lawyer who seemed totally overwhelmed. There was a cabinet meeting on New Year's Eve, 1861, just before my year begins, when little by little the cabinet and congressional committee that was interviewing Lincoln realized that he didn't even know what the plans were for the Union Army. The General McClellan was keeping everything secret from him. The attorney general said he's an honest guy. He's a man of character, but he lacks the power to command. And yet somehow through the course of this year, when America really did come within a hair's breadth of ending the American experiment, ending in failure, by the end of the year, Lincoln was signing the Emancipation Proclamation. He was in command of the army and of his own party and of his own cabinet, and he had really figured out how to lead this country through the ordeal.
When you say the American experiment ending, you mean we would have split in two, that the South secession would have gone forward, and that we would have not been the United States of America united in any way.
Yeah, well, what people in 1862 understood that we've kind of forgotten is there was nothing stable about North and South. That's the way it was split then. But folks out here in Missouri, Illinois, this area of the country, they had no real ties to the East. Their commercial ties were with the South down the Mississippi River. That's how their crops got to market. Out west, California, Oregon, these brand new states were connected to the East by nothing more than wagon ruts. And, you know, it took 3 months to get around Cape Horn to go from New York to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. So secession, if it got started, if the principle was vindicated by the South, it would have been a tiger that would bite in many directions.
Did Americans, you said the European leaders and others didn't believe that the Union could stand. Did Americans think that the Confederacy had a chance of winning that war?
I think there were, you see, a lot of people did. The ones who didn't think that that the South could win thought that the Civil War was going to be simple, that really most people in the South wanted to be in the Union, and it was just a few hotheads who had gotten control. They believed that one or two Union victories would break the South, you know, sort of cure the secession fever, and people, they'd come back. But in this year, 1862, we have the Battle of Shiloh in April, the first weekend of April, more Americans killed in that one battle than in all American wars put together. And a couple of months later, the 7 days battles, tens of thousands of Americans killed and wounded in the course of a week. And then September 17, the Battle of Antietam is the bloodiest day in American history before or since to this day. People, the war became a cataclysm. And in that point, Paul, lots of people began to say, wait a minute, why are we doing this? And so there was this crisis of confidence, and Lincoln had to explain what was really at stake here.
So there were people in the North who kind of thought, this will be like a weekend. Mm-hmm. They thought it would be like their version of Grenada.
Yep,
all right,
exactly.
Call me on Monday, it'll be over,
right,
and we'll go on. How does he convince them that they've got to get on his side?
Yeah.
And really believe and want to fight in this war? Because we're not talking about, you know, 2012, 2013, where you have volunteers going off and fighting, and 99% of America is not involved in the war, and they're going off to Iraq and Afghanistan, and yes, we're at war, but we're going on with our daily lives. In 1862, you had to actually get people to put on the uniform, and it was hard to do that.
This was like touching every family in the country in one way or another.
Yeah.
And it was a challenge. Lincoln, late in the year, talked openly about, you know, these people in the North, they think we're going to somehow win by strategy. And what is going to be required is hard, desperate fighting, was his expression. And so his annual message, which was a written document in those days, what we now call the State of the Union, he spent a lot of time on it. In the late November, early December of 1862. It's an extraordinary document because what he does, he goes back to first principles. He talks about the geography of our country. He talks about how impossible it is to draw peaceful boundaries. And he talks about the demography. He talks about the natural resources. And he says, look, here, if we can just get through this, if we can come together, if we can have this union, peaceful, protected by the oceans, sea to shining sea, 75 years from now, three generations, the United States can be richer than all of Europe put together, more prosperous, at peace. This is an extraordinary thing to say. Number one, to look that far out into the future, you know. And number two, to say at a time when the sun didn't set on the British Empire and there was a French Empire, Belgian Empire, to say that the United States would be richer than all of Europe put together. But he was right. And so part of his genius as a politician, his greatness that he achieved, was not just the day-to-day ability to hold the Union coalition together, but to set this vision and say, here's why we need to do this.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with David Vondrell, whose book is called Rise to Greatness, Abraham Lincoln and America's Most Perilous Year. By the way, David's going to be at Maryville University tonight for the Maryville Talks Books series. That'll be in the auditorium at 7 o'clock tonight, and he's going to speak about this and do a Q&A and then sign copies of the books that Left Bank Books will be there selling tonight, so you can go and hear much more about this. When you talk about the State of the Union address, or you know, Lincoln's Gettysburg address or his inaugural addresses, all famous documents now, we think in terms of modern terms. You know, when Obama gives his inaugural address on Monday, people can watch and react instantly.
Right.
There was no radio. There was no TV. There were newspapers, but who read newspapers? A small quantity of Americans. So did most Americans even hear these inspirational words you're speaking of in the State of the Union address?
They actually did. There was you know, people were becoming readers. The mass newspaper was just coming in to its own, being invented by characters like James Gordon Bennett in New York, at the New York Herald. And they would pore over these papers, and part of it was the war that galvanized this. The people were desperate for news. I mean, this is how many people learned that their son, brother, father had been, husband had been killed, would be to see a name on a list in a newspaper.
Oh, really? They weren't notified in person, but saw it on newsprint?
They'd find it on newsprint.
Wow.
They were making it up all as they went along. But they did have one technology had come in, the telegraph. And it's part of what allowed Lincoln to really assert his presidential authority over the military for the first time in our history, really, was this machine that allowed him to communicate directly with generals who were off fighting distant battles. You know, prior to that, you know, they'd raise an army, they'd march away from Washington, and the president was sort of you know, at sea.
Put a guy on a horse, send him back, let me know how it's
that's
going.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Now, at the same time he's dealing with this, he's dealing with problems on his own personal home front. They're in the White House. He's got a wife, Mary, who's got severe mental health issues, and a family that, you know, their kids are, you know, not healthy. Right. And I think, did Willie, one of his sons, die that year?
Willie died in February of 1862, and it was a crushing blow. One friend said of Lincoln, he was fonder of that boy than of anything or anyone in life. Mm. And Mary did it. Her grief was so extreme, she had a nervous breakdown. Lincoln was crushed by grief, and one of the things that started me on this book was just wondering how, you know, physically and emotionally this man was able to endure this year. It's extraordinary. I mean, I would have cracked. He wasn't sleeping. He was wrestling with insomnia,
depression. Well, this is what I wanted to ask you. You know, if my daughter died, I'm not coming to work the rest of the year.
Yeah.
I don't care, you know. It's just the most depressing thing I can possibly imagine happening, losing your child.
Right.
Well, here's a guy who is commander-in-chief. He's the president. He's got a government to run. He's got a nation to lead, a nation to heal. He can't say, you know what, I'm going to take a couple of days off, can he?
No. He would, for several months afterward, every Thursday. Willie died on a Thursday. Every Thursday, he would take a couple of hours and lock himself in the room where Willie died, and no one was allowed to disturb him while he sat and grieved. But no, he didn't have this option. I think Lincoln was famously a very sad and lonely man, although he's always surrounded by people. His law partner called him the loneliest man who ever lived. And one of the things he learned from sadness is that the way to get through it is to put one foot in front of the other. He writes a beautiful letter at the end of 1862 to the daughter of a friend of his who had been killed in the war. And he says to her, "You're young. This is your first experience of grief, and so you think you're never going to feel better, but you will. You have to keep going. Take it from me. I know whereof I speak. I've been through it." And I think that's part of the way he survived this ordeal of the war, was that he had learned that really at an early age.
You know, I've had friends who've lost children, and I don't know what to say to them to this day. I mean, I have a friend who's youngest son died 15 years ago, and to this day, I still have no word. I don't know how you talk about that with somebody, and I certainly don't know what it's like to be on the other side. I just know I'm not getting out of bed for a really, really long time. So this position he was in, this seemed odd. Now, one last thing I have to ask you about. We're going to have the inauguration on Monday, and of course, security in Washington, D.C. will be on a par with what it was 4 years ago, right, which was already historical. No precedent to the amount of security that was there, because it's our first African-American president. And it'll be the same this Monday. When I saw Spielberg's movie, Lincoln, there are scenes of him. He gets in, you know, a horse-drawn carriage, and he goes around Washington. He's going to go meet somebody. He drives, you know, "Take me over to their house." And, you know, he's going right through the streets. There's no security around him. There's no police. There's no armed guards. There's nothing. He's just going wherever he is. Is that what life was like in Washington, D.C. for the president? Like, nobody knew what the president looked like? There's not even a, hey, Abe?
People would stop and watch him go by. It drove Edwin Stanton, the Secretary of War, absolutely mad. He begged Lincoln to allow him to assign him a troop of cavalry. And Lincoln's reaction was, "I have to see people. If somebody wants to kill me, they can kill me." He was very fatalistic about it. And so in the summer of 1862, they moved out to a house on the hill outside of Washington to escape the swamp that the White House was sitting in. And Lincoln would ride his horse back and forth from the summer White House to his office at the White House every day, twice a day, often by himself. There's one scene where apparently he and the vice president rode by themselves for 3.5 miles. Wow. It's extraordinary.
That is extraordinary. And your book is the damn good read. It's called Rise to Greatness, Abraham Lincoln in America's Most Perilous Year. David will be at Maryville University tonight in the auditorium at 7 o'clock. Get there early. Get yourself a seat. Get a copy of the book from Left Bank Books. He'll do the talk and the Q&A and then sign a bunch of them afterwards. I hope it's a big success for you, and I hope the book is a big seller for you.
Thanks very much, Paul.
Thank you for coming in here. David Vondrell joining me here on the Big 550 KTRS.
All right, let's get a look at traffic and see how things look right now with Tim Weiland. Tim?
Well, they've just cleared an accident that was on eastbound 70 just before Cole, so you've got a little bit of a backup that's starting to break up there. Again, on northbound 170, you are slow from 70 up through Scudder. Eastbound 270, just a little bit off the pace between Lindbergh and 170. We do have a stall on eastbound 64 at McKnight, and look at southbound 270. It's starting to hit stop and go between Manchester and Doherty Ferry. And this traffic report brought to you by Bosch Wiper Blades. Bosch reminds you to change your wiper blades this season and be prepared before extreme weather hits. Get exclusive Bosch beam technology for superior all-weather performance. Bosch Wiper Blades, clear the way. From the Golden Oak Lending Traffic Center, I'm Tim Weiland on the Big 550 KTRS.
And I say segregation now, segregation tomorrow, and segregation forever.
This Monday is the day we honor Dr. Martin Luther King.
We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only.
This is a good time to reflect on our similarities, our common humanity.
You've got to keep the white and the black separate.
And not our differences.
I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
We've come a long way, but
we still have so much more to do. The Big 550 KTRS.
Good morning.
Hey, sweetie, hand me my toothbrush.
Here you go.
Excuse me.
Just a minute.
A little togetherness goes a long way in the bathroom.
Raise your arm.
Time to call Gallier and Thompson Kitchens and Baths at 636-391-9099.
Grab the shower curtain. I'll pull you over.
My foot's stuck in the trash can.
Uh-oh.
They'll call you back. Provide an itemized estimate so you know what you're paying for. And their guys work when they show up.
Help me pull it off my foot.
Be it a large or small project, Gallier and Thompson offers the highest quality and professionalism in the business. With more certified kitchen and bath designers on staff than any other firm in the area, their designers are on the leading edge of industry trends. Gallier and Thompson, next to Uncle Bill's on Manchester Road, just east of 141, can help you reclaim your space.
I think it's stuck.
Call Gallier and Thompson Kitchens and Baths for a free estimate. 636-391-9099.
What's that number?
636-391-9099. View their portfolio at GallierandThompson.com.
Our buyers negotiated the best deals of the season on the best floors, and they're all priced to move at Lumber Liquidators' January liquidation sale. Our best laminates and vinyl wood plank are 20% off our already incredibly low prices. Gunstock oak pre-finished hardwood, one of America's most popular hardwoods, is just $269 a square foot. Plus, get special extended financing. These deals will not last. January liquidation sale is going on now, so visit LumberLiquidators.com today and find your local store.
Not all superheroes wear capes. Most just look like ordinary people. They are the members of Rotary, men and women whose superpowers are the capacity to care and the desire to make the world better. So the next time you need a superhero, don't look in the sky, look in the mirror. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Brought to you by the Rotarians of District 6060. Learn more and find your local Rotary Club at Rotary6060.org. That's Rotary6060.org.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. A Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon. Paul Harris, Dan Strauss, Eon the Peon.
Hey!
No.
Nobody's happy about that.
Somebody is. You know who I bet isn't happy about that? Lance Armstrong?
No.
Lance, are you happy today?
No.
I didn't think so. Anybody who thinks I'm not going to keep beating this horse for the next 2 hours, you are sadly mistaken.
That's our show.
Yeah.
We cut the cord in my house this month. Not the TV cord. I would never cut that.
No.
But we cut the phone cord. We finally got rid of the landline.
No.
Got rid of it because...
I've tried telling my mom and dad to do that for
at least two years
now.
Everybody's doing
it. Do you have a landline where you're living now?
No, I do not.
You know, my wife has a cell phone. I have a cell phone. My daughter has a cell phone. Why do we need a fourth phone number? Mm. You know, the entire demographic of people who called my home landline number.
Telemarketer.
Would be like KMOX's audience, 75 plus.
Yeah.
My mother and my mother-in-law
were
the only people who ever called us. And since you mentioned telemarketers, I wish I had done this a year ago. We would have missed out on a whole year of those political phone calls.
Oh, yeah, the robocalls.
Those annoying pollsters and the robocalls and all that stuff.
Now that I think about it, though, I think that's why my mom and dad are still keeping theirs, because...
They like those calls?
No,
yeah,
they're my two grandmothers. I don't know if...
They wouldn't understand a new phone number?
That'd be possibility.
Tough.
See, my mom said to me, when I told her that we had done it, she said, well, what if I call and I want to talk to all of you? You used to be able to put me on the speakerphone. I said, well,
there's a speakerphone on all these
phones. My iPhone has a speakerphone, Mom. And, and by the way, talking to a bunch of people on a speakerphone is just as annoying on a cell phone as it is on a landline phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
Well, what's worst is when...
Where do I go?
Yeah.
Everybody seems a mile away from the phone.
Yeah.
And if the person who made the call, who's the person at the one end, and there's three people at the other end, if anybody talks over the other, you can't hear anything.
Yeah, no.
So there's a lot of this. What? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... What? What did you say? I caught the last bit of that. What about the North Pole? No, nothing about the North Pole, Mom. We're not going to the North Pole.
I want to say we've been landlineless for 3-4 years. We were an early adopter.
Yes, you were.
To the cutting of the cord.
So far, no problems at our house except for one. There's a fantastic charity here in St. Louis called the Scholar Shop. It's at Clayton and Brentwood. And
sure, been there.
We donate clothing to them several times a year. Most of it is not mine because I don't have a lot of new clothing.
You still wear all the same clothes.
Exactly.
There's nothing to give away.
By the time I'm done with a piece of clothing, nobody should wear it.
You're not getting rid of last year's fall wardrobe.
Exactly. But I live with two women. And so there is always there's a constant influx of new clothing and shoes.
You can't wear 2012 spring clothes.
Yeah, they're not that bad, but there's enough of it. Or every once in a while, my wife goes down to the basement. Okay, I'm going to finally clear out this stuff. And so we donate a couple of times a year to the scholarship, who, by the way, then sell the things that are there. You could actually go down there and purchase used clothing at the Scholar Shop, and then they use that money to do scholarships for young kids in our area. And I think it's a wonderful cause, and we've been happy to support that. So we get a letter in the mail from the Scholar Shop the other day, and it's not just a tax receipt or anything. It's, please contact us about a donation you made a few months ago. Really? What is that about? My wife calls, speaks to the woman there. Oh, we've been trying to contact you, but they had our landline number, mm-hmm. so they couldn't get us. Turns out that I had left some money in
a big wad of money?
Not a big wad of money, but I left some money in the pocket of a pair of jeans or something that my wife had donated. And they had it.
Wow. That's very upstanding.
I thought it was phenomenal. And I didn't tell them this, but I'm going to tell you right now. This is why this is going to be my official charity in St. Louis for a long time to come. I mean, they're great people. They do great work. Intensely honest. And this is just proof of it. But the moral of the story is, if you dump your landline, give them your new phone number.
Yeah.
Going to use that money along the way. 4 o'clock. Joe Hipperson and movies coming up soon. This is the Big 550 KTRS St. Louis.
ABC News. I'm Sherry Preston. New information about the Americans in Algeria. The situation is still not resolved. That's the latest word from U.S. officials continuing to keep a